Shoresheim Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Well, shalom again, everyone. I'm Bill Cloud, and I want to thank you for joining us again today. We have been talking over the last couple of weeks about the seed of the woman. Actually, we've been talking about the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. And at the close of our last program, we were discussing how Esau typifies this other seed, the seed of the adversary. And because of his jealousy, because of his envy, because of his bitterness toward Israel, Jacob, he is compelled to want to try to destroy Israel, or Jacob. He has this hatred, and he says, I'm going to kill him. This goes all the way back to the beginning when we see Cain striking down his brother Abel. He was jealous of his brother Abel. God had favored Abel because Abel did the right thing, and Cain refused to do the right thing. So instead of responding to God's admonition to correct himself, he goes out and calls his brother into a field and then kills him. Well, later on, Esau, who also rejects God's admonitions, who also rejects what is holy, he took the birthright, which represents that which is holy, and exchanged it for something common and profane, a bowl of soup, because he despised the birthright, the Bible tells us. He had no regard for things holy, and so he rejects God. But in rejecting God, by default, you embrace the adversary. You embrace his word, his seed. And eventually, you are going to bear the fruit of that seed, just like Cain did when he murdered his brother, when he lied to God, when he took what did not belong to him. He typified the fruit of his father, the adversary. So Esau is going to do the same thing. In his heart, he has already murdered Jacob, and as soon as he gets the chance, he's going to murder Jacob. But it didn't stop with Esau. Even though Esau did not end up murdering Jacob, it wasn't because he didn't want to, but it didn't stop with Esau the man. That conflict continued on through his descendants. The people of Edom, or the Edomites, in some translations, the Edomians, they lived in an area across the Jordan River, south of the Dead Sea region, in what's called the Arava. And this region ran, as I said, from the Dead Sea down all the way to the Gulf of Eilat and on into portions of Arabia. And so today, if you go to Israel and you stand at Masada, for instance, you look across the Dead Sea, you're beginning to see the region of Edom. And so these people lived there for centuries, and they were always a constant thorn in the side or threat to Israel. There was a constant state of war between these two. And if you'll remember, we talked about that God had in Genesis 3 placed enmity between the serpent and the woman and between their respective seeds. In Jacob and Esau, we see this enmity between the two being played out, and it went on for centuries and centuries. Now, there was a time in Israel's history when Edom was conquered, and it was by the Hasmoneans. Well, actually, let me back up just a little bit. Edom was conquered also by David, but there was a time when the Hasmoneans conquered the Edomites and actually forced them to mingle with the Jews. The result was this: a man by the name of Herod the Great, who was probably, aside from Esau himself, one of the most prominent Edomites in all of Scripture. Now here's why we bring that out. Because it was Herod the Great who was in power when the king of Israel, the righteous seed, came into the world. And what did Herod the Great want to do? Because there were those coming to worship him who was born to be the king of the Jews. He pretended that he wanted to do it as well. He put something out there that appeared to be good, but it was concealing his evil intent, which is the way the adversary always works. But Herod the Great is the one who wanted to, let's put it this way, decapitate the head from the body. The Messiah is the head of the body. He wanted to strike the head of the body. Genesis 3, remember, you'll bruise his heel, but he'll crush your head. And the adversary wanting to reverse that decision. Well, that's exactly what Herod the Great tried to do when he destroyed those children, those male children in Bethlehem and a surrounding area. He was trying to destroy the head of the righteous seed, the Messiah. Well, it's really important, I think, to note that he wasn't a Jew. Herod the Great was not a Roman, although now he had been propped up, so to speak, by the Romans, and that it speaks prophetically, I believe, for the last days, that the Romans, the West, were in control of things, but they're the ones that put him into power. But it was the Edomite, it was the descendant of Esau, who was actually and actively trying to destroy the righteous seed. So Esau has this ongoing war with Jacob because he has this lingering hatred for Jacob. So then, we see that Esau, not only the man Esau, but those who typify that spirit. And we could group Cain in with this. So if we go back to Cain, he did murder the righteous seed because of jealousy, because of strife, because he thought that Abel had something that belonged to him. Why did Esau hate Jacob so? Because he thought that Jacob had something, the blessing, that belonged to him. Ishmael, I'm sure that when he was sent away with his mother Hagar, looked at Isaac as being the one who possesses what I should possess. And so there is this envy, this longing to have the favor and the blessing, but rejecting the responsibility required to obtain that blessing. To acknowledge that we have to embrace God's word, His seed. We have to embrace that without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. We have to place trust in the blood of the Lamb if we're going to receive the blessing. And those who refuse to do that, all they can see is that Israel possesses something that we think belongs to us. And I dare say that's indicative of the fact that they have embraced the seed of their father, that is the adversary, who probably thinks that those that God has called his priests, that is, the followers of the Messiah, possess something that he thinks belongs to him. They're just manifesting the fruit of that other seed. So that's the way it was in the beginning, that's the way it's been through history, and that's the way it's going to be in the end. The adversary works through these operatives, Cain, Ishmael, Esau, Esau's descendants, and in the end of days, of course, it will be the anti-Messiah. And again, I kind of think that the whole scenario that we see the first time the Messiah came, the West empowering Herod, who's an Edomite, and Herod being the one who actually tries to strike at the righteous seed. But anyway, that's another story. But all of this is to demonstrate that the adversary is going after the one that God calls the righteous seed, the seed of the woman. And that righteous seed throughout the Bible is called Israel. Now, in Exodus chapter 19, beginning at verse 5, here's what the Creator says of Israel. That Israel shall be a special treasure unto me above all people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 22, here he says, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. So in other words, the Creator identifies Israel as that good seed, or if you will, the seed of the woman. But once Israel has been designated as the seed of the woman, as the righteous seed, and from God's point of view, that means blessing, that means life, that means prosperity, simultaneously, the adversary has marked Israel for destruction. He has marked Israel as his enemy, and through his operatives, through those that he's been able to influence down through history, even to this day, they're going to set their sights on Israel to try to destroy Israel. Why is it that Israel has suffered so at the hand of... Why is it that the land of Israel, just this small little patch of ground, is so contentious in the world and has the ability to affect every nation on the face of the earth? Why is that? Why is it that Jerusalem will become a cup of trembling? Why? Because the other seed cannot long coexist with the good seed. And again, that good seed is identified as Israel. But I need to interject this here. We're not talking about Israel just in the terms of what the world calls Israel. But we're talking about Israel in these terms. Those that exhibit and manifest the fruit of their Father in heaven. Those who have been born again of that incorruptible seed and thus produce that good fruit. Those are His people. That's Israel. We're not ignoring the other, and we're not suggesting that we replace the other. No, to the contrary. If you've been watching this program, you know how adamantly against replacement theology I am. However, I am a very strong advocate for in-placement theology, meaning that those of us who have been born again in the Messiah are part of that family called Israel. Here's why I said that. Because if Israel is the good seed marked by God for prosperity, for peace, for blessing, then Israel has been marked by the adversary as an enemy, and from his point of view, marked for destruction. There is an ongoing war that the serpent wages against Jacob, against Israel, against God's people, against the seed of the woman. It started in the beginning, and it continues unto this very day. Because in his mind, if that's the right word, I believe that he thinks, as long as there's an opportunity, that he may still yet be able to crush the righteous seed. And so this war wages on. He has not thrown up his hands in defeat just yet. Even though the Messiah has already destroyed the works of the devil, it's determined, yet he continues to war on. And that's important for you and I to understand, because we're in this world, and so we have the responsibility to be that good seed, to be that righteous seed, not to give him a target. No, but the reason we would be the target is because those that are the seed of the woman, the remnant of her seed, as Revelation 12 puts it, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah, are the biggest threat to what he wants to do in the world. We, because of the Messiah, stand in the way of what the adversary would do, and therefore we have the responsibility to be that good, to exemplify the fruit of our Father and his word. So again, Esau wanted to destroy Jacob, consequently destroy Israel. That war continues on to this very day. Now, there are some prophecies in Ezekiel, specifically chapter 35 and 36, and in the prophecy of the book of Obadiah, that strongly suggests to us that there are physical people here on the earth today who are probably the physical descendants of Esau, if not the physical descendants, who are at least front and center exemplifying the fruits and the spirit of Esau. And those people are, according to Ezekiel chapter 36, you can look this up in verses 1 through 5. You can tell who these people are because they make a claim. And that is, they say that the mountains of Israel are theirs for a possession. They claim the mountains of Israel to be theirs. And they say that this land does not belong to Israel, doesn't belong to Jacob. And in that chapter 36, the Creator refers to them as the remnant of the nations and all of Edom. And so it is Edomites, from the Bible's point of view, who are in the land of Israel today, who are claiming the mountains of Israel as their possession. God says they're the remnant of the nations and they are Edomites. And if you read in chapter 35, you will see that they have this ancient hatred toward Jacob. They strike out against Jacob. They want to kill Jacob, and that's why God speaks against them. In the prophecy of Obadiah, God is going to destroy Esau or Edom, the descendants of Esau, because of the violence that they've committed against their brother Jacob. That's in Obadiah verse 10 and verse 18. Now, here's why this is all interesting, and this is the part of the teaching that's going to be politically incorrect, and if you've been watching this program for any length of time, you know we're not politically correct. We try to be diplomatic, but we're not going to be politically correct. The mountains of Israel that's being referred to in Ezekiel 36, specifically verse 5, is what the world calls the West Bank. And so let me put it together for you. In the area that the world refers to as the West Bank, that is the West Bank of the Jordan, is this contentious area that Ezekiel prophesied of, where there are people who will claim the mountains of Israel, or shall we say the West Bank, as theirs and not belonging to Israel. And according to Ezekiel 35 and according to Obadiah's prophecy, these are the same people in biblical language who are hateful of Jacob, want to destroy Jacob. As a matter of fact, the word that is found in Obadiah for violence is the word Hamas. For the Hamas against your brother Jacob, he says, I'm going to bring judgment against you. In fact, I want you to see that word on the screen. It's Chet Mem Samech, Hamas. That should sound familiar to you. There's a group of people that the Bible centuries ago prophesied because of the Hamas against your brother Jacob. I am going to destroy you. And the people who commit Hamas against Jacob are the same people who are claiming the mountains of Israel, that is the West Bank, as being their possession rather than being the possession of God's people. So here's what we're saying. Edom is still alive and well. Esau is still waging war against Jacob, against Israel, not just the people the world calls Israel, but those of us who've been born again in the Messiah, who've been born again of that incorruptible seed. We're part of this too. That's part of our heritage as well. And we need to be cognizant of that. We need to acknowledge that. Now, the word Hamas in Hebrew means violence. In Arabic, it means zeal. And there is a group, an organization, this very day called Hamas. Now, that is an acrostic, as I understand it, for a group that is trying to bring about liberation from their point of view in what they call Palestine. But I can't ignore the fact that centuries ago, the Bible used this exact word when speaking of Edom, who is the people trying to take what they believe belongs to them. That's Esau's problem. He thought the birthright and the blessing was his. But it never was, because it was never in his heart to embrace the birthright, the responsibility. Cain thought that the favor should be his, but it couldn't be, because he would never acknowledge what it took to obtain that favor, that he had to place trust in the blood of a lamb, that Esau had to embrace the responsibility of the birthright, but it meant nothing to him. And so the things they thought belonged to them never did. But they refuse to let go. And they see Jacob, they see Israel, they see the righteous seed, the seed of the woman, as being the enemy. And so they wage war. You remember back when we were talking about the birth of Esau and the birth of Jacob. It was Esau who comes out of the womb first, and his heel is poised to come down on the head of Jacob. And if that had happened, once again, had he crushed Jacob's head, what would have become of Israel? Well, there would have been no Israel. And so, from Israel's beginning, we see that it is Esau who tries to get into position to bring his heel down on the top of Jacob's head in order to destroy him. And until he, Esau, is finally and ultimately destroyed, he will continue to wage war against Jacob, against Israel. Now, that's why Esau has to be destroyed. That's why Esau must eventually and ultimately be overcome and be destroyed. Because he will never rest, he will never give up until he's destroyed. And so then in Obadiah, verse 18, it tells us, "The house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame. But the house of Esau shall be stubble. They shall kindle them and devour them, and no survivor shall remain of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken." Again, God's the one determining that Edom is going to be ultimately destroyed completely, because God knows what's in Edom's heart. He knows that it's in Esau's heart to kill Jacob, to destroy the righteous seed, because that's what the other seed does. They are compelled to oppress and to destroy the righteous seed. Why? Because the other seed has taken root in their heart. Because at one point in time, they rejected God's admonition, God's word, and God's call to turn to Him. They rejected that and by default responded to the adversary's seed, to his word. And that word, that seed, took root and it began to grow and mature and eventually produce its fruit. And that fruit cannot and will not long coexist with the righteous seed. God placed enmity between the two. And so again, Esau is emulating his father, the adversary. He's simply carrying out his father's wishes when he makes war against Jacob. And so God, who is the shepherd of Israel, knows that Esau must be destroyed. So Esau, his heel is poised to come down on the head of Jacob. It's a descendant of Esau, Herod the Great, who tries to destroy the righteous king, the Messiah, at his birth. It was a descendant of Esau, Haman, who in Persia tried to destroy the Jews there. And if it's been that way throughout history, what makes me think it's going to be any different in the end of days? Now, this is really important for those of us who are born again in Messiah, because in Genesis chapter 32, Jacob is returning from Syria, coming back into the land, and he has an encounter. It says in verse 24, "Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, 'Let me go, for the day breaks.' But he said, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' So he said to him, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Jacob,' or 'Yaakov,' or 'hand on heel.' And he said, 'Your name shall no longer be called Yaakov,' or 'hand on heel,' but 'Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed.'" Now, the background of this is he's coming into the land and he's received word that Esau is coming with 400 men. And you can find that in chapter 32, verse 6. Now, if he's coming to kiss and make up, why is he coming with 400 men? It seems to mean that Esau has not forgotten that was in his heart, and that is to kill his brother Jacob. And this is bothersome to Jacob, and so right after this, of course, is when he has this encounter. But here's why I believe this encounter took place. Because he's been known as Jacob. I'm in the one having to shield my head from my adversary's heel. He says, "You know what? No longer are you going to be that guy, but you're going to be Israel. You're going to be, well, let me put it this way. You're going to be born again as Israel, the one who overcomes." Let me read to you how the Septuagint renders this particular verse. It says this, "Because you have power with God, you shall also prevail with men." Obviously meaning that because you've had this encounter and struggle with God, and you're in right standing with God, you're not going to be the one who has to shield your head from your adversary's heel, but you're the one who is going to overcome your adversary. In other words, put your heel on his head. See, at that instant, Jacob was born again as Israel. He never walked the same way ever again. He was given a distinctive walk that identified him as Israel, as the righteous seed, as the seed of the woman, as God's people. It was that walk. It was not who his mother and father were necessarily or exclusively. It was because of what was inside him, what seed was inside him, that incorruptible seed. And that because that incorruptible seed was implanted in him, the Word of God, he characterized that seed by walking appropriately, doing what God said to do. And that's how you know he's Israel. It says in Psalm 37, verse 23, "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord," which is to say that God has already ordained how his people are to walk. And when we walk according to the way he said to walk, you know what that means? That means that we have been given the authority by the Messiah, who has overcome the world, to take our heel and to step on the head of the adversary, to overcome him. He said, I give you the power to trample on scorpions and serpents, alluding to the fact that the righteous seed has been authorized by the Creator, by the Messiah, to overcome the serpent, to take our heel because he has given us that authority, and to put it on the head of the adversary. And that's why the adversary hates God's people. And that's why Esau wants to destroy God's people, because it's been determined that if they walk according to his commandments and instructions, we will overcome the world, just as Messiah has. We're going to talk about these things some more. And I want you to join me, because, you know, 30 minutes goes by really fast, and there's so many things I'd like to say, but there's only so much you can squeeze in. That's why I want you to continue to tune in, and so you get all the things that we're talking about. Thanks for joining me. Until next time, shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a Bill Cloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.